It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert is out today. Coming up on Central Time, a look at how Wisconsin's largest city ranks in terms of fostering black male achievement. First, it's our last conversation of 2015 with Harry Enten. He joins us every week at this time to talk national politics and elections. As an analyst, he makes a lot of predictions. Sometimes he's right, sometimes not. Today, in the name of transparency, he shares with us what he got wrong in 2015. We also look back at what Donald Trump meant in 2015, whether or not he wins the primary, and we take stock of the influence that David and Charles Koch had throughout the year and what they might have planned for 2016. Harry is a senior political writer and analyst for the online analysis and prognostication website 538. Harry, happy almost New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
So before we get into all the mistakes you made in 2015, there were just a few, actually, that you owned up to. Big news from George Pataki's campaign. Former New York governor dropped out of the race yesterday. Did you see that coming?
Oh, my goodness. What news that is. It was heard from everywhere, from 49th Street in Manhattan to 50th Street in Manhattan. I mean, this is fairly typical. Pataki, who was, you know, a three-term governor of New York, he was a fairly successful candidate in the state of New York, but he entered this presidential campaign well past his prime, and he really never got anywhere in the polls. I think we had 221 polls that were taken in Iowa, New Hampshire, and nationally, and I think he averaged somewhere around like 0.37% in them. His highest poll number of the year was 3%. And this is fairly typical of a campaign that has so many candidates in it. Usually people drop out. And Pataki is just the latest example of a candidate to drop out of this race.
It's pretty amazing when you think about presidential politics. Over the years, over the decades, we've seen a lot of people with very, you know, substantial political resumes, a lot of respect, at least for people who agree with them, or maybe impartial observers in their home state. And then they get into this national field, and it's really easy to be a laughingstock, a joke, that sort of thing. Why would anybody run for president?
You know, you'd have to ask somebody else, because I would never run for president. I don't understand these guys. Why would they subject themselves to potential humiliation? It makes no sense. I humiliate myself enough with the stuff I write. I don't need to get out there and share my personal life. I think that it comes down to a few things. I think, one, people like to be in charge. Some people, they like to shape the discussion, and there's no better place to shape the discussion and be in charge than being president of the United States. It's arguably the most powerful position in the entire world, a chance to really get to shape the future of our country and of the world. And so I think these guys genuinely, a lot of them genuinely want to help. But at the end of the day, there's a big difference between being able to be successful at governing the nation and actually convincing people that you can do so and be the best to do so.
Any thoughts on more candidates, especially on that large Republican field, who might drop out before a single vote is cast?
Yeah, so, we here at 538 did what was called a, dropout draft, and sort of the idea was trying to pick out who would go next, and we looked at news coverage, and we did all that stuff, and there were some picks that we made that maybe we shouldn't have made, but I think at this point, as we look at what's going on, there are really a few candidates that I would select. Number one might be somebody by the name of Rand Paul, who has always said if he couldn't get on the main stage for the next debate, then his campaign might decide to go adios amigos. And at this point, based upon the polls, and that's, of course, what the debates have used so far, Paul's in danger of not making the main stage for the next debate. Mike Huckabee is another person. There's been some chatter that he might drop out in the middle of next month and then not endorse anybody. Again, it's just chatter. And then the final person might be Carly Fiorina. If you've noticed, most of the people who have dropped out so far tend to be more from the mainstream establishment part of the party. And although Fiorina has never been successful in runs for political office, she's more closely aligned with those parts of the party. And she right now in the polls really isn't going anywhere. So one of those three is the most likely. But again, none of them may drop out.
It's our weekly look at national politics with Harry Enten from 538. And Harry, each year you write a piece looking back at mistakes you made in making predictions in the year in politics. Looking back, what do you see as your biggest mistake of 2015?
I would say my biggest mistake was probably not taking Donald Trump seriously enough. As we look forward to Iowa, we're almost nearly a month away from there, a little bit more than a month. I still don't think he'll win that caucus. I'm fairly sure he won't win the nomination. But I think we wouldn't. I wouldn't be being honest with myself or with my readers if I didn't acknowledge that I didn't really think he'd stick as long as he has and as high as he has. And you know, looking back at my posts, it's very clear that what I did was I was consistently saying he can't win, instead of saying, okay, he probably won't win, but here's why he's shaping the race. Here is how he's shaping the discussion. Here is why he might stick around. Here is why he is sticking around. I just didn't do a good enough job of explaining that to the readers, I felt.
So how has Trump shaped the race? What are you going to look for moving forward in how Trump is shaping the conversation and the race?
Well, you know, I think that there are multiple ways that he has, but one, to me, the most fascinating way that he has shaped the race is he has made Ted Cruz seem, to me, a lot more acceptable to mainstream Republicans. Remember, Cruz is this guy who arguably has the most conservative record in the United States Congress, certainly has the most conservative record if he were to get the nomination of anyone nominated by the Republican Party, probably ever. And he's someone who is not well-liked by the establishment. So when Cruz first entered the race, it was like, nah, there's no way it could be Cruz. But compared to Donald Trump, he seems almost like a model statesman. And I think that that is part of the reason why, as you see Cruz move up in Iowa, that he's being discussed more and more as a legitimate presidential contender, because if it's a race between him and Trump, then the establishment may have no other choice but to settle on Ted Cruz.
A big thing with Trump, and this is not just you, is that a lot of people, a lot of observers, data watchers, politics watchers have said, okay, he's on top for now. Sure. We've seen this before. People rise to the top and they drop. The bottom's going to fall out. We won't be hearing about Trump in a week or a month or something like that. And he keeps staying on top. Any reason to expect that wave to crest anytime soon?
So, you know, this is one of the things where I guess I'm going to stick to my horses a little bit more than I did in my article. And I should point out in my article we have a video attached, and it makes me look like a crazy person with my long hair and beard. I have shaved, and I have cut my hair, so I no longer look like that, in case anybody's wondering. But the reason why I would say that Trump would most likely fall off from where he is there's a big disparity from where he is in the national polls versus where he is in Iowa and New Hampshire. In fact, he's trailing in Iowa right now to Ted Cruz, and although he's leading in New Hampshire, he's leading with about the same percentage of the vote he has in Iowa. It's just that the establishment hasn't been able to coalesce around a candidate. But in systems that have plurality rule like we have, the most votes wins. And you have information for the voters in polls of who's up and who's down, there's probably going to be a coalescing around an opposition candidate to Trump. And my own guess, or my own forecast at this point, is he is probably going to lose Iowa and has a decent shot of losing in New Hampshire. And that's basically where his campaign falls apart. I expect his national numbers to sort of follow what's going on in Iowa and New Hampshire. We know that momentum means a lot in primary seasons. And so that is my general understanding, is he'll lose in Iowa. That will help him lose in New Hampshire, and then the whole bottom will kind of fall out. That's my thesis.
Here's an interesting analogy I came across. I wanted to throw it past you. A guy who wrote a book about Rob Ford, the mayor of Toronto, up there in Canada, said there's this mass of people, you know, a lot of people don't vote. They're non-voters. They don't trust politics. They think all politicians are liars. Everybody wonders how to get them to vote for them. Nobody can. But Rob Ford tapped into them, spoke their language, seemed like not one of those politicians that they distrust. That's how he got those people to go to the polls and vote for him. Donald Trump maybe going to do the same thing.
Yeah, so this is the sort of theory that the Trump people have sort of floated, is that there are a lot of people who didn't vote in the last election, and we're going to get them to turn out because we have an unconventional message with an unconventional candidate. So we can look at sort of the new registration numbers that are coming out from the Iowa Secretary of State and the New Hampshire Secretary of State. New Hampshire, it's fairly clear that there really hasn't been much of a change in the registration numbers there, new people registering. They do have same-day registration, so, you know, it's not as clear of a picture. But so far, we really haven't seen the types of numbers of people that are registering that you might expect if Trump was bringing new people into the process. And in Iowa, the same thing. There have been about a few thousand people who have registered for the Iowa Republican side leading up to the caucus. But again, it's not this massive wave that we're seeing. So, of course, it's possible Trump could bring new people in the process, but we're not seeing in the registration numbers and in the polling numbers, such as from Ann Selzer in Iowa, who asks everybody, basically, you're going to show up in caucus. She doesn't sort of make a very constricting screen. She basically allows the voters to tell them. She, in fact, has had Trump in a worse position than pretty much any other pollster has.
Talking to Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. We're taking stock of politics and election news in 2015, looking ahead to 2016. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Regardless of whether he's going to win the nomination or not, why do you think Trump was so popular? How did he change the race? What does it say about our social and political climate? In general, what surprised you in national politics this year? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation now with Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538, taking stock of 2015 in national and campaign politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Your predictions for 2016, the presidential campaign trail and elsewhere. Call in now at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Harry, we're going to stick with Donald Trump and the campaign for a bit. We've got some callers who want to weigh in. Jade starts us off in Plover. Jade, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. It seems to me that Donald Trump seems to be having a psychological campaign, like he's feeding into the fear of the people, even though we live in a relatively, comparatively even, safe time. He's feeding into fear and avoiding any actual topics of politics, as, like social programs, funding for this or that, or foreign policy. And when we're talking about topics like that, especially foreign policy, I'm just wondering what a candidate who's based his whole campaign on fear can really do as a president.
Jade, thanks a lot for the call, Harry. And this is she's not the only one accusing Donald Trump of running an incendiary fear-based campaign out there.
Yeah, and I think that the caller has a great point, and I think that's part of the reason why Trump has not done as well in Iowa and New Hampshire as he has done nationally, and that is voters are really starting to look into the records of the candidates, what they've said, what their plans are for the future, and Trump really hasn't offered up very many specifics, which is part of the reason I think that a lot of analysts such as myself don't think that he'll end up going very far once the voting begins. But as for the point that he's, struck a fear-based campaign, we had a discussion yesterday on the website sort of talking about Donald Trump and who is he like, or is this new politics? And to me, he really strikes a chord very similar to George Wallace in 1968. A lot of fear-based campaigning, a campaign that really plays on fears of voters who feel like that they are losing a voice in the process, specifically white voters without a college education. That's who he's doing best among. And so it'll be very interesting to see who those voters, how they react to Trump as the campaign goes on, and who they might vote for in the fall and the upcoming years to come, and whether there'll be any sort of ramifications of Trump's run yet unknown.
Jade, thanks for the call. We'll go to Dustin next in Chautauqua. Dustin, hi.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What do you think?
Oh, well, I just want to let you know I listen to NPR every morning. So, but I think Trump is going to bring us a lot of new ideas that I'm really curious to see how he's going to back them. And I'm a Trump supporter, because anytime I'm listening, I just hear positive things. And I believe that America is going to see these extreme changes, but are going to be curious enough to vote for him to get him into office.
And Dustin, do you have a particular policy you like what Trump is saying in particular?
Mostly from what I've been hearing, I just catch the news in the morning, is the immigration, his stance on immigration and border protection.
Dustin, thanks a lot for your call and sharing your thoughts. Harry, and that's something that is resonating with Trump supporters, is what he's had to say about border protection, what some people in the mainstream in particular are calling incendiary or inflammatory comments. Some people are definitely agreeing with what he has to say.
Absolutely. I think part of the reason why analysts such as myself may not have gotten the Trump phenomenon as quickly as perhaps we should have is we just aren't really tuned into the immigration debate. We live in cities on the East Coast which are fairly liberal when it comes to immigration policy. But if you look at where Trump is doing best, it's on immigration. That's who voters who care most about that issue are really lining up behind Trump. And that's one of the things that people don't really remember about Mitt Romney's run in 2012, was that he was potentially the furthest quote-unquote, right on immigration. And that was part of the reason that he was able to get through that primary despite having some other positions that were maybe less in line with the Republican base. So to me, one of the big stories coming out of both out of the Republican field this year, but also 2012, is we talk about pro-life issues or abortion issues as sort of being the litmus test for Republican candidates, but immigration may in fact be one as well, as Donald Trump is clearly showing it has a lot of resonance among Republican voters.
But there's a division within Republicans. You're pointing toward that, and there are pro-business Republicans who want maybe not full-on immigration reform, but easier paths to citizenship for people or guest worker status for workers that they need in their businesses.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's part of the reason why Trump, while he may lead in the national polls with the most people saying they want him, he's often also leading among when they ask the question, who do you absolutely not want? He usually also ranks very high. He's a divisive figure within the party, but so far the Trump, the faction that's pro-Trump has been large enough that it's been able to keep him into the lead. So we'll see, though, going forward, whether or not that will continue to be the case. My guess is not, but we'll see.
Dustin, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Nick in Brilliant. Nick, hi.
Hi, Rob. You know, I've really been flabbergasted by the media and the fundamental constituents of the base, like not the base, but the party who keeps on reelecting these people who ship our jobs out of the country, who do all these bailouts. Who, you know, John Kasich was part of Lehman Brothers when it crashed. I mean, how many bailouts, how many things do we need before we wake up and stop electing these people?
Nick, thanks for the call. So frustration, and Nick's probably not alone with what people see as establishment candidates, Harry.
You know, one of the most interesting poll numbers to me over the last few years has been the right track, wrong track of this country, where consistently more people have said we're on the wrong track than the right track. And we really haven't seen sort of the effects of that in politics. You know, last year, for instance, there were all these thoughts, oh, it's going to be an anti-establishment year, or it's going to be an anti, you know, all the candidates who are running, we're going to replace everybody. But in fact, most candidates won their primaries, and most Republicans pretty much won. It was just the Democrats who had a bad year. But this Trump phenomenon and the phenomenon of Trump being high and Cruz being high and Sanders doing fairly decently on the Democratic side, I think is a manifestation of a lot of this anger. People just don't think Washington cares anymore, and they're not seeing anything. And so while in the past a candidate like Trump might not have gone anywhere, people are so upset that they're saying, you know what? Trump may not be perfect, but the system as it is right now is unsustainable, and we need to go in another direction. I don't think that voice is going to be enough that, you know, it ends up propelling Trump to win the nomination, but it could be enough to at least scare the establishment, and more than that, be enough so that someone like Ted Cruz, who in the beginning of the year most people thought didn't have a chance, might actually end up winning the Republican nomination.
Talking to Harry Enten from 538.com about national politics. I want to hit a couple more points briefly, Harry. Something that's flared up in part, again, because of Donald Trump, is the role that Bill Clinton will play in the campaign, specifically as a target of Republicans. People bringing up his history of extramarital affairs, allegations of sexual harassment, even allegations of sexual assault, and then arguments over whether that's fair game. So Bill Clinton as target for the Hillary Clinton campaign, what does it mean?
I mean, to me, it doesn't matter whether it's fair game or not. It's going to be played. And in politics, if something's effective, it's going to be played. And, you know, there have been columns that have been written by some not-so-conservative folks that say that this is fair game. And I think that Bill Clinton, I think most people would agree, has had a questionable track record when it comes to women. And if Hillary Clinton wants to bring him on the trail and pump him up as the surrogate, then he's going to have to answer for these questions. And this is nothing new. I mean, you know, politics has been dirty for hundreds of years. I mean, Andrew Jackson's wife was brought into the campaign in 1828 and then died after the campaign, and Jackson blamed John Quincy Adams for it, his opponent. Dirty politics is nothing new. Trump has every right, in my opinion, to bring it up. And then whether or not it's acceptable or part of the normal discourse, the voters will decide. And if they think it is, then Hillary Clinton's in trouble, and if they think it isn't, then her opponents are going to be in big trouble.
One more thing to get to before we're done. Money and politics, not a new thing, but a big piece in Politico says David and Charles Koch, their political operations, bring a lot of money into politics, is something new. They're not just supporting the Republican Party or Republican candidates, they're creating their own infrastructure around the country, separate and maybe even superior to the Republican Party campaign infrastructure that has people, Democrats certainly worried, some Republicans worried too. Do you see them having a big role in 2016?
I mean, money will always have a role in our politics, but I think that we learned from Jeb Bush's campaign that money isn't everything. You can have as much money in the world as possible, but if the people aren't buying what you're selling, then it doesn't matter how shiny you make it. So we'll see. Because this is a new phenomenon, I think it's very risky to comment whether or not it will have a large effect. But my opinion is always to wait and see and to be suspect that things that haven't been proven before to work will actually end up working this time around.
We'll leave it there for 2015, Harry. Look forward to talking to you next year.
Sounds good. Happy New Year.
To you, too. That's Harry Enten. He's senior political writer and analyst for 538. He joins us every week at this time with the latest in the world of national politics. The national group, the Campaign for Black Male Achievement, released their latest index showing that Milwaukee ranks in the top third of major U.S. cities in creating an environment for black males to meet their goals in education, work, and their personal lives. The new index measures 50 major cities on things like the presence of national initiatives to support black men and boys, as well as funding to support them. Milwaukee ranked 16 out of 50 cities in this report. Joining us now to discuss the index and what Milwaukee is doing to gain this ranking is Jeffrey Roman. He's benchmark coordinator of minority male achievement at Milwaukee's Public Policy Institute. Jeffrey, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You work in this field. What was your reaction to this ranking in this national report?
I thought it was, first it took us completely by surprise. We didn't know until later on that the report was actually being developed. And so when the National Campaign for Black Male Achievement asked us to respond with some information on indicators and activity that was happening in Milwaukee, we wanted to show a good foot and really demonstrate and highlight the good work that's happening in Milwaukee to galvanize our community. And so we were it was a surprise, and then to see where we did fall on the list was another surprise. We know that there's a lot of work happening here in Milwaukee and a lot of work nationally, and I thought we fared very well among the 50 cities that were included in the report.
Well, people outside of Milwaukee, maybe even people in Milwaukee, may not know what's out there and in this effort to support black men and boys in the Milwaukee area. Can you just paint us a picture. What's the landscape? What kind of efforts are we seeing there?
Sure, sure. Well, there's a lot of activity happening spring across the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County as well. First and foremost, the work that's being led by the city of Milwaukee and the Milwaukee Black Male Achievement Advisory Council, led by Mayor Tom Baird and Alderman Ashanti Hamilton, and a number of community and public sector, private sector, nonprofit sector individuals from the community who have been working together for the last 2.5 years to really help the city of Milwaukee develop a strategy for black male achievement. But that work is met and partnered with a number of other organizations and institutions, including Milwaukee County, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Milwaukee Area Technical College, Milwaukee Public Schools, a number of nonprofit organizations, a number of some of the leading philanthropic organizations, and individuals in our community who are just committed to supporting and empowering young black men and boys of color in Milwaukee.
And you were quoted in an article about this ranking as saying there is a lot of good stuff happening, but right now we're not at a point where there's a coordinated effort. There's a lot of people maybe doing their own thing, reinventing the wheel. What would be the next step to create a more unified, coherent, cohesive, I should say, effort?
Yeah, so I think what we're doing, we're on the right track. We still have to put some more capacity and infrastructure in place to make sure that we're coordinating and communicating the work across sectors. That work is happening. It's happening slowly, but it is happening, thanks in large part to the investment that the city of Milwaukee is putting into the Black Male Achievement work coming in the 2016 city budget. And there's some work that's happening across the philanthropic sectors to support that work. But we can do a better job. And there's a lot of great stuff. I always said there's a lot of great stuff here in Milwaukee. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. We don't have to create any new programs. What we have to do better at is coordinating that work and then bring it all together. And I think we're on the right track of getting there.
Well, let's talk about the problems that all these different efforts are tackling. What are the priorities? What are the biggest concerns in Milwaukee for black men, young black men in particular?
Sure, and there are many, and they're all intersecting. And so if we look at the educational outcomes for black men, and particularly those in the K-12 system, and we look at mass incarceration and the absence of black fathers in families of color, and we're looking at the employment disparities that we have in our community, we fare among the worst in the nation for all of those different areas. And so our work here for Black Male Achievement is really about, one, identifying who's doing work in those areas, where might there be some gaps that exist that we can work together to fill, and then how do we build infrastructure and capacity to be able to fill those gaps.
Talking to Jeffrey Roman with Milwaukee's Public Policy Institute about efforts to boost educational outcomes, as you just heard, economic outcomes, quality of life for black men in Milwaukee. After a new national report gave praise for the most part for the amount of efforts, the amount of investment being put into those efforts. So, Jeffrey, it seems like a hard thing to know is where to start. I mean, I've talked on this show to advocates, activists, local politicians who say, we need to boost the economy. We need more jobs in order to deal with problems of crime and violence and educational outcomes. I've talked to a violence researcher who says you need to stop the violence and then the economic activity will follow. So it's a chicken or the egg question. What mm-hmm. are the biggest things that need to happen to get that started?
the reality is all of the above. Mm-hmm. We have to do all of them and really be strategic and strategic about how we identify and really work together to accomplish all of those things and hit all of those buttons at the same time. And it's a lot of work. It's a lot of intentional work. But I think we have the resources in our community. I think we have the know-how in our community. And more importantly, I think we have the people and we're willing and ready in Milwaukee to do that work. But it can't be one or the other. It has to be all of that. And a part of the work that we are taking on the city of Milwaukee to be able to address the issues of black male achievement is by tackling them all together and being strategic about that.
A lot of people are probably most familiar with the bad news, the educational disparities you mentioned earlier, the new jump in homicides in Milwaukee. Are you worried that the bad news may be crowding out some of the good stuff that's happening maybe beyond the headlines?
I don't want to say I'm worried. I think that's something that just happens. Media is, for the most part, as a selling point, they just navigate to the negative. And there's always going to be more negative news than there is positive news. But that doesn't discount the work that the great work and the positive things that are going out in the community. And what I think what that means is that the organizations and the individuals on the ground that are doing that work have to work just that much harder to make sure that they're counteracting those negative messages.
Well, can you put a face on some of those success stories, the good news stories, the ones that are paying off? Name some of the groups or the
sure.
efforts that are
sure,
that you see paying
sure,
off.
Sure. So there are a number of them, and the one that the top one that comes to mind is the work that Anjali Ellis is doing with the We Got This initiative that started 2 years ago in the summer of 2014 on 9th and Ring in 53206 neighborhood here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And there was a young man who came to his door, whose mother came to his door and said, "My son needs some help. Can you help my son?" And he said, "Yeah, I got this. We got this." And he called the community, and he has a garden on the side of his community, and he put the young man to work. And he mentored him. And then the following week, he invited other men and other young people to come and do the same thing. And by the end of that summer in 2014, there were over 100 young men on 9th and Ring every Saturday being supported and mentored by other men who were called by Andre Ellis. And that work continues to this day. Just a couple weeks ago, there was the event called the 500 Tuxedos. 500 men and boys, black men and boys, came together in tuxedos. Very dapper, and did a march, took a big picture down at the art museum, and then did a very nice dinner together at Chic Cafe. There's the work that UW-Milwaukee's doing in their African American Males Initiative. Just, again, 2 weeks ago, on December 14th or 15th and 16th, they hosted 800 black male students from school districts around the region, and their educators and their principals and their teachers to help them really really be more intentional about how they're serving in school the young students that they're working with. So there's a lot of work happening in the community at the institutional level, at the grassroots level, and we want to make sure that work is highlighted, and that's the work that we're taking on.
Yeah, that struck me as you were listing those stories, the different scales we're talking about, mm-hmm. From one zip code, one corner, really, in one case, to citywide, school district-wide initiatives. Let's talk at that micro scale, those local things. Do we see a lot of those springing up around Milwaukee?
I think we do. And let me just say, a lot of them have been around for many, many, many years. A lot of them, in light of what's happening nationally with the movement for Black Male Achievement, the movement with Black Lives Matter, and a lot of those things, a lot of groups are starting to be more vocal and more active. But there are a lot of nonprofit, smaller groups, grassroots groups that have been on the ground and that are spurring up and want to make sure that their commitment is equal to the disparities that we see in our community.
How do you coordinate? How do you help coordinate between something like that? Like you said, the We Got This that started when somebody knocked on somebody else's door and started a movement, and those, you know, the city government or a citywide philanthropic group. How do you get them to work together, not duplicate efforts, not step on each other's toes?
Mm-hmm. And so I think what we've been successful in doing, and I think what the report does highlight, is the work that the Black Male Achievement Advisory Council for the City of Milwaukee is doing. And that is a table that has been created by the mayor and a number of alderpersons to have a table where there's representation from the philanthropic community. There's representation from individuals like Andre Ellis, who's doing some of the grassroots organizing and work with young people. There's room at the table for the school districts, our policymakers at the city, county, and state level, our faith community and our business community, and that table, those organizations are talking about the different networks that they're doing, the different projects and initiatives, and how they can support each other, and then looking to philanthropy to see where they can support some of those initiatives. And so our mantra is, the table is spread, there's room for everybody at the table, and you can sit there and you can be there, and all ideas are welcomed.
We're talking to Jeffrey Roman. He's Benchmark Coordinator of Minority Male Achievement at Milwaukee's Public Policy Institute. Starting point today, a national index that ranks Milwaukee in the top third of 50 major U.S. cities in fostering Black male achievement and projects and efforts to do that. That's what we're focusing on now. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you seeing this happen in your own neighborhood? Do you have some good news, a positive story, a local effort that you've witnessed, maybe even participated in, whether you're in Milwaukee or beyond? What kind of things do you want to see happen there? What are your hopes? What kind of projects would help with young Black men in particular in the Milwaukee area? And what questions do you have for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our look at a new national index ranking Milwaukee in the top third of 50 major U.S. cities for efforts to foster Black male achievement. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about this? What ideas do you have about how to improve things like educational disparities, economic disparities in Milwaukee and around the state? What's being done in your community? If you're in Milwaukee, what do you see happening on the ground? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll take a caller now. We've got Denise on the line in Eau Claire. Denise, hi.
Hello.
Oh, what did you want to bring up, Denise?
Well, I'm admittedly really late to this conversation, so you might have already covered this, but I just remember about a year ago some reports about Milwaukee having risen to the dubious honor of the largest education gap for, I think it was K-12 Black students. First of all, maybe I'm remembering that wrong, but I'm wondering what the steps are being taken regarding specifically youth achievement gap.
Denise, thanks for that call. We'll throw that to our guest, Jeffrey Roman from Milwaukee's Public Policy Institute. Jeffrey, you touched on the education gap briefly. Can you talk about some of the specific efforts to tackle that in Milwaukee?
Yeah, so one of the efforts that has got a really alarming national attention has been the literacy rates of young Black men in Milwaukee. And I think the numbers were something like 3% or 70% of Black males in third grade are not reading at grade level by third grade. And so a lot of the work that we're doing is working with the initiatives in Milwaukee that are working on educational outcomes. For example, the Milwaukee Succeeds initiative, the Milwaukee Summer Youth Leadership Program, the work that Milwaukee Public Schools is doing around literacy achievement, and working with them, want to help them really understand culturally, what it means to work with young Black male students and students of color. But then making sure that the young people not only are connected to those resources and those initiatives, but that their families and the community groups and the community support systems that they have in place, that they're all connected, and getting the resources and support that they need as well. well. And so that looks like the increase in mentoring that we're doing, recruitment of mentors that we're doing in the city, the number of faith-based organizations that we're engaging to be able to do tutoring programs and connecting them with the school districts here, working with some of the issues, the families that we're working with, knowing that a lot of the issues that we see in our school grounds are because of issues that we see in the community, in our neighborhoods, in our families. And so how are we supporting fathers, and how are we supporting single mothers and the resources that they need to make sure that they are being aids and support for their students who are having academic problems. Denise, so those are some of the ways that we're working on that.
Denise, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. You know, the index, the national index that we're talking about, noted specific issue areas, including jobs-related programs. They noted the city's Earn and Learn program as one of them. I'm not familiar with that. What is that?
So Earn and Learn is actually developed by the mayor, I believe, in 2004, 2006, whenever he came into office. It's actually a youth work learning program where young people are encouraged to apply for a paid summer intern with a nonprofit or with city government or with a private sector business. And a part of that internship, that paid internship, they're doing workforce development. They're learning soft skills. They're learning what it means to be responsible workers, positive, responsible, productive citizens. They're getting a paycheck out of that, really to foster and encourage, again, work ethic, and what it means to be an employee and being able to be productive citizens in our society. And so Earn and Learn, and there are a number of programs in addition to the Earn and Learn that are also happening across the city.
So that's job training. The report also mentioned a project called Compete Milwaukee, trying to bring private sector employers in to hire people, to provide jobs for people with those skills. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. And so the Compete Milwaukee is actually a specific program that actually works on transitional jobs and working with individuals who may have been disconnected from employment opportunities or from training opportunities, and working with them, again, similar model to the Earn and Learn, to connect them with employers, connect them with workforce development training, and then to offer them a transitional job with the hopes of building their skills, building their resumes, and hopefully turning those transitional jobs into permanent employment opportunities.
Talking to Jeffrey Roman, he's with the group Milwaukee's Public Policy Institute, talking about a new national index rating cities based on their efforts to foster achievement for young black men in particular. And Jeffrey, wanted to get into, you mentioned actually reaching out to families when it comes to educational issues. There are initiatives called Beyond the Bell, a Life Course Initiative, Milwaukee Fatherhood Initiative. Can you talk about a few of those?
Yeah, and I'm proud to talk about all of those initiatives are initiatives that are at the table that I work with personally and in this work. The Beyond the Bell is a network of organizations that are supporting young people after school. So we're talking about after school programming, tutoring, summer school, summer camps, those kind of things. It's really about building a robust network and then providing training to those organizations to make sure that their programs are top quality. If we look at the Life Course Initiative for Healthy Families, it's really, really intentional about working with parents, particularly African American families, and making sure that they have the support and resources they need to be healthy families. And the biggest component of that is really working with fathers and making sure that our fathers are supported in the many ways that fathers need to be supported. If we look at other initiatives like Milwaukee Succeeds, a similar initiative that not only does work with on the school end, but also encourages community support and wraparound services from the community, and working with faith-based and working with nonprofits and working with individuals and organizations to make sure that there are complementary resources outside the school hours.
Let's get to another caller now. We've got Ryan on the line in Waukesha. Ryan, hi.
Hi, good afternoon.
What do you think?
I really like everything that's being said in terms of working with the infrastructure of the community and families and giving them the support. But I'm assuming that there's an assumption that doesn't make sense. I'm assuming that there's an assumption here that once we work with the infrastructure, the social infrastructure, and prepare kids with all the programs that have been mentioned here, then we get them into the school, and the school does not capitalize on that. And the school structure and the practices that are being used in the classroom oftentimes are not appropriate for helping the kids move along and grow in their learning.
Ryan, Ken, thanks a lot for the call. Just since we just have a minute or two left, Jeffrey, are there efforts to change something as fundamental as the way classrooms are run, the way kids
sure.
are taught?
Sure, and I can speak for the work that we're doing with Milwaukee Public Schools and who's been a partner with ours since we started this work 2.5 years ago, and some of the work that we've been doing to help them build their capacity and infrastructure internally to be able to do some of this work in terms of increasing teacher quality and making sure that there's cultural competency and cultural agility and cultural intelligence within the schools. So we've been working with them, and just this year in the budget for Milwaukee Public Schools, just this year, they are hiring an equity specialist, whose responsibility is going to be really deploying a system-wide, district-wide cultural competency framework for the district that takes into consideration, takes in the work that we've been talking about for Black Male Achievement. And so there's a lot of work that's happening. We've used the last 2 years in our Black Male Achievement strategy to really identify again the institutions and organizations where a lot of young Black males are, and then working with them to identify where there are gaps in their service delivery, where there are gaps in infrastructure and capacity, and how we might work with them to be able to fill those gaps.
And briefly, Jeffrey, if somebody's hearing this and says, hey, I want to help, I want to be part of the solution, just briefly, what should they do? Who should they reach out to?
Sure. Well, you can always reach out to me. You can reach me by phone at 414-270-6959. You can reach me there Monday through Friday until 5 o'clock most days. Or if you'd like more information on the work that the city of Milwaukee is doing around Black Male Achievement, you can go to www.milwaukee.gov/BMA, BMA for Black Male Achievement, www.milwaukee.gov/BMA.
Jeffrey, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Jeffrey Roman, Benchmark Coordinator of Minority Male Achievement at Milwaukee's Public Policy Institute, talking about a new index that ranks Milwaukee pretty well in efforts to foster Black male achievement. New Year's Eve, tomorrow, big, crazy parties, staying up late. Does that sound exciting to you or exhausting? For some reason, I've never been a fan of the big New Year's Eve party. Too much pressure to have fun or something. So I'm going to keep it mellow, home with the family, appetizers, New Year's Rockin' Eve on the TV with lots of perfect musical performances for tween-age viewers. How about you? What are your plans for New Year's Eve? Big party all night long, or stay home, see if you can actually stay awake until midnight? Let us know how you ring in the new year. Share your New Year's Eve plans over at the Central Time Facebook page or tweet us at Central Time WPR. And if you have a New Year's tradition that you go back to every year, it's a thing you gotta do on New Year's, the treat you have to have, the sparkling cider that you always drink, tell us about that too. Again, tweet us at Central Time WPR or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Coming up, we'll hear about a proposal to help pay for local road maintenance by allowing counties to raise their sales tax by 0.5%.